Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
May contain sexually oriented content. Ah, the mission statement of my career, making my mom and dad proud. Always keeping it not safe for work, apparently. You know what I mean? It's just what I do best, y'all. All right, happy Monday. Hope you guys had an awesome weekend. I certainly did. I'm paying the price for it a little bit tonight, though. I'm not going to lie. You're going to hear it in my voice. You know, it's like we say throughout the week. You work hard, got to pay those bills. We live in a capitalist system, a capitalist culture. Got to focus on self-care, but you also have to focus on leisure and pleasure. And let me let you know that I definitely focused on leisure and pleasure this weekend. I'm going to have to go back to podcasting every now and then so I can let y'all in on the deets, because I can't, you know, not everything's radio friendly. You know, this is a family friendly show of sorts. Anywho, I digress. It's Monday already. How did we even get here again? I literally was saying to Jeffrey, when I was thinking about the fact that it's Monday, that I had a deja vu of just last Monday, and a whole week has blown by somehow. There it is. Big show tonight, though. Also, tomorrow night, we have Margaret Cho coming on. What's interesting about her is she has such a fascinating journey. I remember watching her comedy special when I was a kid. I was always a big fan. But her journey through sexuality and some other topics we're going to get into. Very honest, very vulnerable person. So excited to sit down with her tomorrow. So stick around for that. But tonight we're going to be talking a lot about suicide, because it's National Suicide Prevention Week. And we're going to honor that by talking about red flags for those that want to be aware of how they can help those around them, those they love, and also ways to help destigmatize mental illness. We are part of the I'm listening program. I know, sorry, I dropped that one. So it's going to be that kind of night, y'all. Expect that. My gosh, I'm going to be stuttering, poor grammar, flubbing around. So it's an important topic. We're going to be talking about that throughout the night. And, of course, Monday night, so Dr. Jen White will be with us, talk about red flags, and also ways to maintain healthy autonomy while in a relationship. That's something else we talk about. But question of the night's up on our Loveline AG page. What societal changes should be made to support mental health and suicide prevention? Hit us up with that. And as always, you can give us a call, 833-LOVE-001. 833-LOVE-001. Y'all, pick up that phone. I know it's in your hand. I know you can't put it down. Give me a call. But right now, let's talk about some stuff in the news real quick. Sending unsolicited penis pics. It's now illegal in Texas. Illegal. Hear that right. Illegal. And could also result in a $500 fine. I'm sure many states are going to follow suit, but basically they've introduced a new law that means sending a nude lewd. Check that one out. Sending someone a nude lewd. I don't know if that's correct. Anyway, to which they didn't consent, whether it's on a dating app, Messenger, or even on AirDrop, is now illegal. Because we were talking about the people that were doing that on AirDrop, where they were just literally AirDropping nudes of themselves to whoever had their AirDrop on in the vicinity. And people were doing it in subways and whatnot. So yeah, Grindr hookups forever changed. But actually, for those that are online, Grindr, which is a sex and relationship and social networking app, has now on the profile a thing that you can check saying okay to receive nudes. It's now an option. So we could think about adding that to some of the dating apps. Like, are you open to receiving nudes? You know, I'd be like, yes. I just want to make a blanket statement to the world. I'm open. I'm open to it. In my phone, my DMs, my email, my Facebook, my Tinder, my Grindr. Like, you know, wherever you can find me. Just my Snapchat. It's all about honoring the beauty of the human body. That's what it's about. Body positivity, sex positivity. Let's keep it real, y'all. We got to get comfortable counting them. So a couple weeks ago, I went on a date with someone. And I somehow was talking about sexting. For me, sexting is a really beautiful, important part of courtship. And also for me, assessing my sexual compatibility with someone, right? It's just part of the process. It's a relational developmental stage. And they said, wow, that's pretty risky, right? Like, you're a public figure, you're a doctor. I said it's even more important as a doctor to be normalizing, you know, sexuality. But they said, you really want your nudes out there. And I said, well, listen, we have to get more comfortable with that. We shouldn't be having shame and guilt about having a sex life. And some people take advantage of it and release them. And I know a lot of people have been, you know, traumatized by their nudes being released. But again, the work is about getting more comfortable with nudity and sexuality and eroticism. It's not about rolling backwards away from it. And my answer was, if things ever got released, I'd release more. That's how I would disempower it. Be like, here you go, enjoy these too. There's nothing to hide about that. There's no shame in that. It doesn't speak ill of someone's character. We have to kind of normalize that, because as the millennials are definitely showing us, sexting is here to stay. And I recommend it to couples I work with as a way to stay close and connected, as a way to keep eroticism alive, right? It's a way to kind of keep it stoked. But you got to be careful, because again, not everyone wants to see that. And so consent's important, you know? So Texas, now illegal. Woof. It's considered a Class C misdemeanor and resulting in up to a $500 fine. That's real. Anyway, that's happening. But a woman after my own heart, 83-year-old grandmother, uses Tinder to find younger men for casual hookups. Look, love that. Because we do think, we used to say, your sexual prime is when you're in your, you know, late teens, early 20s. That might be your biological prime, but sexually, your prime is always and forever. And it should be more so as you age, and hopefully you're developing more body esteem, more sexual self-esteem, sex throughout our entire lifespan. So basically, this is a whole story of you're never too old to date or to have sex. So 83-year-old grandmother, her name is Hattie. She's embraced the dating app Tinder in a bid to find younger men for her to have casual sex with. You got to see her photo. This woman is lit up and glowing and living her best life. So, you know, she's not struggling with all this. Basically, she was married for 25 years. Her and her husband decided to separate. Their split was amicable. And without him around, she said she felt like she was missing out on having an active sex life, and basically was determined to find new relationships. FYI, though, for those that are interested, she only dates younger men. Sorry, y'all. She doesn't date in her own age bracket. That's how it goes sometimes. We will have her pick, though. We're going to post on our IG story to honor the amazingness that Hattie is, showing us sex and app at all ages. Okay, here's a story after my own heart. World's most tattooed doctor... That's right. Wants to break down the traditional stereotypes. Yo, go with it. Dr. Sarah Gray, she's training to be an orthopedic surgeon. 31-year-old's already tattooed from her neck to her toes. Plans on getting more. And she said she wants to show you that you work in the medical... Excuse me. See? One of those nights. She said she wants to show you that you can work in the medical profession and still be your own person. I love this because, let me tell you something. I have a hashtag that I use sometimes, which is hashtag doctors with tattoos, because I think it's really important to normalize that you can have a high level of education, training, and professional competence and still like body art and body customization. But what came up in the beginning when I first typed that in was hashtag doctors with tattoos aren't real doctors. And I thought, how ridiculous and shaming, and you're going to minimize and illegitimize someone's education and work because they have tattoos? Like, really? But then you're reminded that we live in that world. Like, we live in L.A. Those that don't know. But L.A., everyone is covered. It was one of the most shocking things that happened when I moved here from Philadelphia. When I was in Philadelphia, I started getting tattooed at 17. Do that math. And back then, I was one of the few people outside, you know, my friend group per se. But, and then I moved to LA and I was like, everyone's tattooed. I also was in shock. I was like, everyone's also gay. Like, I'd never seen anything like it. I lived in New York and Philly, but in LA, everyone's gay and everyone's tattooed. Guys holding hands in the supermarket. I had never seen that before in my life. Yeah. And everyone's like covered. I was like, y'all. Anyway, so Sarah's pushing boundaries. I'm right there with you. I'm trying to do the same thing every time I lecture or wherever I'm at. I'm always trying to show those bad boys. All right. So question night's up on our Love on IG page. Weighing on that. We're going to be talking about suicide stats and also talking about what population has the highest rates of suicide. We'll be breaking that down. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right. We're back. Question of the night's up on our Loveline IG page. There's questions about needed societal changes to support mental health, because this month is National Suicide Awareness Month, so we're going to be talking pretty consistently about this topic. We'll be talking later in the show with Dr. Jen Wider about red flags and signs. And one of the things that we want to have happen and why we're having this discussion is we want people to get comfortable with the concept, the terms, the struggle, the issues. It's something we have to be able to talk about. It's kind of like sex education. We have to be familiar with these terms and words so that we can engage it. This is something that's happening, and I want people to have confidence in hearing others come forward about it or going forward themselves to someone if they're needing help. And we can't do that if we don't even know how to say these words or if these things are foreign to us. I was looking at some of the stats, and
It was quite shocking when you really look at the numbers. The World Health Organization, the WHO, they put out some research, and they were basically saying, this is brand new, this is just from this week, one person dies every 40 seconds from suicide. That's a big number. Way too high. The number of people worldwide who die from suicide, though, is declining, but we still have one person killing themselves every 40 seconds. I mean, sit with that. That's not mental illness. A lot of that is cultural problems that people are encountering that makes their lives unmanageable. I mean, we really sometimes want to privatize it and say, they must have mental struggles. Sometimes, but I think the majority of them, we're going to talk more about this tonight, but the majority of them, it's because of the culture we live in. Think about that, where there's homophobia, transphobia, there's body shaming. People are overworking. Sexism, all these different factors come together to create a world that just doesn't necessarily find a place or value for everyone. The global suicide rate has decreased by about 9.8%. I mean, good news that it's going down, but that's still really high. Suicide's the second leading cause of death among young people 15 to 29 after road injury. Suicide, the second leading cause of death? I mean, that's shocking. That's a big statement. The WHO Health Organization, though, came out and said something really bizarre. I got to call this out, though. They said one way to bring down the global suicide rate is to limit access to pesticides. Say what? I had to reread that to make sure I was reading that. Because they're saying that's one of the most common methods of suicide. Okay, let's break this down for a second. The way to get rid of suicide isn't by removing the methods by which people take their lives. It's a very, very odd way to be solution-based. That's just bizarre to me. So we're going to talk later in the show about actual things that are going to help. But I couldn't believe that that's one of the first things that they claimed. They say other steps. Thankfully, they swoop in with a little bit more reasoning. Is educating the media on how to report responsibly on suicide. Still a little odd to me. Identifying people at risk early. I'm on board with that one. And helping young people build skills to help them cope with life stressors. Now, again, it's great that we want to help people identify the risk early. It's great that we want to help people build skills to help them cope with life stressors. But again, it's still victim blaming. How about we work on getting rid of some of these life stressors so that people don't need those skills? Right? Like the system has some issues. And if we allow the system to maintain itself, we keep saying to people, get better skills, do some yoga, take antidepressants. It just still allows too many people to be impacted by this. So we have to look at the systems that are creating the problems around which people aren't able to thrive or where they can't see a future that feels good to them. So that's where the work has to go. And we also have to look at it population from population, because if you look at the gay community, they have three times a higher rate of suicide contemplation. Three times. They are five times higher in their rates in suicide attempts. So we definitely know that homophobia then is a driving force. If this population has higher rates and the only significant difference between them and other people is a sexual orientation, well, then right there's my point that homophobia is clearly what's driving that. So I don't want gay people to get better skills for coping with the stress of homophobia. Let's work on dismantling homophobia. How about that? I don't want people that are fat identified and larger bodied to learn better skills to cope with our fat phobic culture. Let's get rid of fat phobic culture. You know what I mean? Let's not victim blame and privatize all these issues because they're systemic. So pushing it a little bit further, the highest rate in general, though, of suicide is men, white men. They have the highest rate of suicide. We're going to talk more about that when we come back, and also how to destigmatize mental illness. It's a really important topic, really important conversation. Give us a call, 833-LOVE-001, 833-LOVE-001. Listening to Love Line with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. And it is National Suicide Awareness Month. So we're talking a lot about suicide prevention, but we're keeping it real. Because, you know, as I'm doing a lot of the research for tonight's show and, you know, for the entire week and an event that I was part of on Sunday, the I'm Listening campaign, which is amazing, stunning, and powerful, some of the stuff is just ridiculous. I got to just be honest. You know, the World Health Organization, as I was saying in our last segment, one of their solutions for suicide prevention is removing, what was the word? Pesticides, because it's the second most used method of suicide. Now, the problem is, I want to kind of read you this. The New York Times, They had, what was this? It was an image that they posted. It's a stack of papers, and it says on the top of it, this is on my IG. So if you want to go deeper in this, go on my IG, at Dr. Donahue. I think I tweeted as well. It says, self-love in big letters. And then it says, will literally solve all your effing problems. Okay. Now, again, victim blaming. Why? Because it places the resolution for a lot of things that are harming us and that are toxic and that are violent and oppressive institutionally, systemically, culturally. Things like racism, body shaming, ableism, homophobia, capitalism, all these things that are traumatic for a lot of people that make their lives not livable, that make them not able to thrive. It's basically saying, just love yourself. And it's like, well, that's interesting because you're locating the problem in the person. If we loved ourselves more, we wouldn't be bothered by racism, body shaming, ableism, homophobia. Like, tell that to someone who's had a bottle thrown at their head for being gay, that they just need to love themselves and that will literally solve all their effing problems. No, what'll solve our problems is to get rid of things that are problematic. And so, when we see that the U.S. has the highest rate of suicide and it's men, right? Men, white men. Well, what's that about? Well, it's a couple things. It's gender roles. It's heterocentricity, capitalism, toxic masculinity, corporate culture. And what do I mean when I say all that? I mean this, that we tell men, people that are male identified, that their worth is tied to being productive, to earning money, and to consumerism, and that your worth and value as a man is that you can provide and that you go home and bring home the bacon. And what that does is men are stressed, they're overwhelmed, they're burnt out, they're my practice, and they're coming in after 14-hour days, they're exhausted, they're tired. That is part of why people are committing suicide. We are not honoring ways that people can engage in self-care. We're not honoring that you deserve time off and that you're not lazy. You're allowed to lay on the couch all day. You shouldn't have to have worked hard that week to be able to earn that. We need to give people mental health days off that are paid. Also, men have and struggle with an inability to feel confident in expressing and relating to their emotions. I can't tell you how many men I work with where a lot of our work is centered around identifying what emotions are, what they feel like, and putting words to it. Where the only emotion sometimes they can identify is things like anger. And they feel really weak, quote unquote. And here's where toxic masculinity and heterocentricity and gender roles comes in. They don't feel like a real man, quote unquote, if they say, I'm burnt out, I'm depressed, I'm anxious. We have to normalize that. We have to make that okay. We have to get comfortable talking about that. And so people are burnt out. They're working too much. Let's not legitimize or glorify someone that's like, I had a long week, I worked 80 hours or 60 hours. And we're like, they're a hard worker. Let's make that a bad thing. Right? Let's make people not need to turn to addiction and suicide because they're so anxious, depressed, and burnt out because of the expectations that are upon them. And that's why I'm always on the show trying to normalize self-care, leisure, pleasure. Take days off from work. Stay home because you wanted to, because you needed it, because you were tired, because you're depressed. Imagine living in a world where you can call your boss saying, I'm depressed, I can't come in today. Where we legitimize mental health as much as we do physical illness. You can call out if your leg fell off, but you can't call out because you're depressed or anxious. You need to be able to. Mental health is as important as physical health, but we don't normalize that, right? We should get paid days off for self-care, for fun. And then you add on these intersectional identities. Now, being a man might be hard enough in those capacities. Now you make them gay, a person of color, gender nonconforming, trans, disabled, a sex worker, an immigrant, fat, not neurotypical. It's going to become worse and heightened. And so we have to look at some of these psychosocial causes. And because a lot of them are led by that, we have to have some cultural solutions. And just privatizing and saying, oh, it's a mental illness, it's something that they're personally struggling with, they should go to therapy, allows the causes to sustain themselves and to continue to exist. And then we send people out of therapy back into these problematic systems that they're not thriving in, whether it's a bad marriage or work issues or whatever it is we're talking about. And so we just have to start working on the systemic changes that are needed. Later in the show, we're going to be talking about how to destigmatize mental health. And what that means is, how do we make it more normal and acceptable for people to talk about their mental health issues, for people to publicly say, I'm depressed, I'm anxious, I suffer from generalized anxiety or whatever it is, because that's part of the work too. Is people not feeling like they have to hide these things and suffer in silence, but it's something we can all normalize, talk about, share resources, be socially supportive. Because again, God bless social media, but a lot of things we're putting out there are just our best and our successes. So, all right, coming up next, we're going to slide into the DMs. And then after that, we'll be talking about destigmatizing mental health. Question of the night's up on our Loveline IG page. So weigh in on that. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. And hey, guess what? You want to go to Vegas
for a big old summer party. I guess it's not really a summer party, though. It's September, early, late September. However, though, we are throwing an amazing party. I guess you can call it summer. It's Vegas, right? It's always summer. September 20, 21st, and 22nd, we're giving away 5 trips to Vegas for the Life is Beautiful Music and Arts Festival, plus all access to Life is Beautiful pool party hosted at the Downtown Grand Hotel and Casino. We got Billie Eilish, Post Malone, Rufus Del Sol, Carly Rae Jepsen, Griffin, Janelle Monáe, and Shalou. I love Shalou, I'm not going to lie. So let's get straight. We're putting you up at the Planet Hollywood Hotel Casino for the weekend. We're going to give you 2 3-day passes to the Life is Beautiful Festival. Just go to wearechannelq.com to register to win. It's that easy peasy. I got to get down there. I got to bust out that pool party. It's the summer, even though it's late fall. Actually, no, so the end of September is not late fall. That's early fall, right? That's fall. Summer ends on like the 29th, right? All right. But not out here in California. It's always summer. Anywho, I'm all over the place tonight. Guess what? It's time for DMs. Sliding the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms because it's a big old sexy world and we want you to explore with confidence. Here we go. Hey, Dr. Chris. I've only been in one relationship before, so this seems a bit of a stretch. I'm gay, and of recently, I'm being courted by this gay couple who sexts me and constantly talked to me. We've kind of hit it off, and now I've been invited to their home. I don't know what to expect, so I wanted some advice on threesomes or throuples. They made it clear that they're interested in looking for a third in their relationship. Okay, well done. Well done. This is a gay developmental sexual relational stage. So the throuple, we've talked about this before. It's when 3 people are all dating. In theory, a throuple is supposed to be non-hierarchical, which would mean everyone's empowered and legitimized, right? Some people shouldn't really use that word. If the couple wants to maintain their one-on-one unit, the two of them, and the third person's brought in as long as they don't create any waves and is not, you know, some people, look, let me put it like this. Not everyone's looked out for all the time, and that's the key configuration you want to look for, is that if you were to seriously date them, you want to have access to each one alone and together. But if that's not offered, then they're not looking for a throuple. They're really just looking to have you come in and be around sexually or even romantically unless somehow you threaten their relationship. And that's where you have to be looking out for yourself. A true throuple would be all 3 of you are dating. You all have the same level of power. You're allowed to build a relationship with each of them separately and together. And if things aren't working out, you don't necessarily get kicked out. Maybe one of the other ones do, right? Everyone's empowered and can feel secure. And if that's not what they're looking for, then not the right word. But as far as threesomes, you don't really have to worry about it. They're the ones that have to worry about it. Usually the couple's the one I lay the rules down on. But the person entering, you just go and have fun. You know what I mean? That's all that's supposed to be about. Sliding the DMs brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms because it's a big old sexy world and we want you to explore with confidence. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about how to destigmatize mental health. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. 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 This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
National Suicide Awareness Week and National Suicide Awareness Month. So we're going to be covering it extensively tonight, but also during the week. A really important topic because just like anything else that's triggering or raises anxiety, we want to normalize the conversation, right? We want to get people comfortable hearing about it, talking about it, acknowledging it. So we're going to talk a little bit right now about how we can destigmatize mental illness. Again, this is all up on my social media, on my at Dr. Donahue Instagram page and my Twitter at Chris Donahue and my Facebook. And I'm just saying that so that, you know, if you want to circle back to some of this information and things that's important, maybe we'll even get it up on the website somehow. Okay, there we go. Got the thumbs up on that. So destigmatizing mental health, what does that mean? What it means is we want to make normal conversations where people talk about what they're struggling with in terms of mental health. We want it to become very familiar, very normalized, where no one has shame or embarrassment about it. People are just so comfortable hearing it and talking about it that when someone needs to bring it up to ask for help, resources, or support, people are like, of course, I've been there. Let me share this with you. I can hear this from you. Because right now, a lot of mental struggle, mental illness, and mental health, people have shame around it. People are afraid, what will people think of me if I told them how depressed I am, that I have had suicidal thoughts, that I'm struggling with addiction? And that keeps it underground. That keeps people from seeking help. It's kind of like when we talk about destigmatizing STDs. People won't get tested. They don't want to know because they're afraid of what will happen because people aren't familiar talking about these things. They don't know how to engage them, how to encounter them. We still have a lot of pathologizing language. So let's go through the steps to destigmatize mental health. First off, we want to stop looking at individuals as though it's something wrong with them inside them. These are a lot of the causes of mental
struggle, I want to use that word first off, just to water it down a little bit, are social factors, right? We work endlessly on the show to try to get rid of body shaming, you know, sex shaming, racism, homophobia, all these different things are a lot of the things that are causing the issues. Moving forward, we also have to stop othering people that have mental illness, because we all have some element of it, right? We talk about whatever it is, depression, anxiety, addiction. We're all on that continuum. We are all on the depressed continuum. We all suffer from these feelings. Just some people have it to a more extreme. It's more chronic. It's more ongoing. And I say that so it's not other. Like, that person's mentally ill. We all struggle with that. We all have pieces of addiction in our lives. We all are a narcissist. It's just how much, right? We all have depression. How depressed are you? We all have anxiety. We have to normalize these things. We can all relate to these things. This is not something that you have to struggle and feel as though it's not relatable. Come forward and talk about it. Also, we have to normalize self-care and therapy. Going to therapy is a good thing. I want people to confidently talk about it. Talk about the therapist they have, the therapy they're going to. Support their friends in getting into therapy. Everyone could benefit from that, especially when you're struggling. Even when things are going well, it can help maintain that, but especially when you're struggling. And self-care, really honoring when you need to stay home, really honoring when you need to call out of work, really honoring when you need to just lay on your couch watching television and zoning out, really honoring when you need to lay in the bathtub and listen to music that makes you feel good or matches the feeling you're in. Talking openly. Sharing on your social media. I love seeing that. There's so many more people doing that, and celebrities as well, putting pictures saying, had a rough day, normalizing my depression, I'm on these meds. People are talking about being bipolar, autistic, Asperger's. It's really important to realize that it's around us more so than we realize, making it normal. Also, legitimizing mental illness like we do with physical illness. We are very comfortable calling out of work or going to a friend if we have an injury or a wound and going to a doctor and get help with that. But mental illness, not the same. We don't take it as seriously. If someone's like, I can't come out tonight, you know, my shoulder's in pain, my back pain, we're like, we get it. If someone says, I can't come out tonight, I'm anxious or depressed, we're like, get over it, toughen up. We're staying home from school or getting out of going to work. Sorry, I can't come into work today. I'm too depressed. I'm too anxious. My anxiety is really high today. I need to stay home and take care of myself. That has to be acceptable and normal. Just like if you had, again, fell down and broke your ankle, we'd be like, of course you got to stay home. Of course you can't come out. Of course you need help. I want people to help each other with these mental illnesses as well. If someone looks like they're struggling, ask them. That sometimes is the most normalizing thing. Hey, are you okay? And really holding space for them to say, no. Do you need anything from me? Can I come sit with you? Do you want to talk? Do you want me to actually give you space? Do you want me to come over and just be around you? We don't have to talk. I'll just bring you soup, right? Like, we really need to do what we call community care. Having others be there to support us and help take care of us. Employers, I'm always going on and on about that. Employers that are listening, give your employees paid mental health days off. Give your employees health care so that they can get into therapy. You know, give them resources. When you're doing the I Am Listening campaign, an individual is there, Bambi, she does trans activism. Her organization, all the employees, they're given free massages as part of just being a human being that's employed there. Time away, they're taking care of them. I mean, that's stunning. You know, I've talked about this also on air, where some corporations are offering things like yoga and mindfulness, but they're not doing it for your well-being. They're doing it so you can work more and work harder. That's the problem. We need to work less. So that's another step to destigmatizing mental illness and working mental health. Work less. And I know that's a place of privilege. Some of us can't afford to work less, but those of us that can, take advantage of that. And finally, we have to get some education around mental illness and how it isn't dangerous. That's part of what keeps us stigmatized, where we think mentally ill people are danger. They're not. They're actually more of a danger to themselves, and they're actually at a higher risk of being oppressed and have violence put against them than they are being violent towards other people. And we talk about these mass shootings. It's not mental illness. It's entitlement. It's sexism. It's racism. I mean, those are the things that are driving the gun violence, access to guns, poor impulse control, but it's not mental illness. Mentally ill are not violent. They're the smallest percentage. Again, most of the violence is actually directed towards them. So these are all the things that we have to talk about and look at if we're going to destigmatize mental illness. Just keep talking about it, you know, getting comfortable hearing it, using the words, the languaging, and finally calling it out. When you hear people problematically talking about mental illness and people that are struggling, empathize and normalize it. If, you know, you hear people saying like, oh, that person needs help. Really? Well, then shut your mouth and help them. Help people that need help, right? We use that to shame people and to other them. We'll be talking more about that this week, though. Coming up next, we're going to be Dr. Jen Wider talking about red flags and signs that someone you love might be struggling with suicidal ideation. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. 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 This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back, and we're sitting down with Dr. Jen Wider, women's health expert and author. Dr. Wider, how are you?
Hey, Chris, how are you? Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, you as well. So this week is National Suicide Awareness Week. So we wanted to talk a little bit about that. Start us off by talking with us about some red flags that might indicate someone's considering suicide.
It's such an important topic, I think, you know, and I think it's tremendous that we dedicate an entire month to suicide awareness and prevention. I think one of the biggest issues for parents and for people that have loved ones that are suffering from depression or hopelessness and despair is the signs to look for. Because certainly when, you know, you have an adolescent in the house, someone who experiences mood swings and may be hormonal, it's difficult to decide between what may be something acute that needs to be addressed immediately and something that may just, you know, go in and out of what we would consider mood swings for people that may not need to be addressed by a healthcare provider. Right. So one of the things that people need to be very tuned into are these red flags for or warning signs, you know, because there's no really single cause for suicide. It often occurs when, like, stressors and health issues create the situation where people feel really hopeless and full of despair. And I think one of the things that people need to remember is that these symptoms need to persist for a serious amount of time. So we all are moody. We all feel hormonal at times. And if these moods or these feelings get in the way of our daily functioning and persist for, you know, 2 to 3 weeks without lifting, then that's definitely a red flag. So, Chris, one of them is just persistence, consistency of these symptoms. So from a mood standpoint, when you are worried that someone may be considering suicide, they're depressed, they have the symptoms of a clinical depression, they may feel anxious, they may feel irritable, they usually exhibit a total loss of interest in regular activities. So on the behavioral spectrum, people that are potentially suicide may withdraw from activities and isolate themselves from their family and friends. So if it's a school-aged person, you oftentimes will see a person, you know, pull out of, like, sports or extracurricular activities. Their grades start to hurt. They plummet. Another red flag is your sleep habits get messed up. So someone who may be sleeping too much or too little potentially is feeling, you know, this chronic depression that could lead to suicide. And other things, other symptoms similar to depression are fatigue, aggression, giving away, you know, possessions that you love. That's always a major red flag when somebody is giving away, like, prized possessions.
Right.
And then, of course, someone who's searching online for ways to end their lives, someone who's increasing substance abuse, and then talking about it. Anybody that expresses suicidal ideation, we have to take that seriously. You know, it's very, very important. If someone expresses to you, even if you feel like they're just looking for attention, it is always a medical emergency.
Right. Yeah, and I think that can be scary for parents to really kind of explore some of this. Because as you kind of said, adolescence is such a difficult time where I imagine some parents already feel a little distant from their child as their child's focusing more maybe on their friends.
Totally.
It's kind of like, and I know you've talked about this before, and it's kind of bumps into some of the things you talk about in, you know, in your book, your most recent book, about, you know, kind of just forming a relationship with your child so that you can have difficult conversations when the need occurs, like not waiting until something is a red flag to try to have really vulnerable, close conversations. But if you're always working on having access and the ability to do that, then when these rough times come, it's a lot easier. Yes.
And you're absolutely right. You know, you're definitely more tuned in, especially with this generation that is so online compared to generations in the past where, you know, a lot of a child's life exists online and their interactions with their friends. Parents feel isolated, and it is extremely important to have those honest and, honest communication with your kid and to get on all of the social apps that they may be on, especially when they're a tween, early teenage, just to pay attention to what's going on, what the rhetoric may be, because sometimes you can pick red flags up that way also.
So do you do that? I know you're a mother. You're on your...
Yes.
Okay.
I do. I definitely practice what I preach, and I did a lot of research for that book that you were talking about, the Got Teens book, and I found, you know, studies show that if you follow along with their apps, and I'm on, you know, Instagram with my kids and some of the other apps, and I just try to keep track of what they're doing, who they're contacting, you know, who's in and out of their lives. Oftentimes you can make suggestions about what your child puts out, but neither you nor your child has control of what comes in.
That's right.
And sometimes it takes a parent to say this is inappropriate or this is dangerous. This kind of rhetoric can lead to something more dangerous. And I try to stay on top of it the best I can. But the best thing that you said is to have that honest and open communication with your child so that you do know if their behavior changes. You know, I've spoken to a lot of parents who have experienced a suicide in their families, and oftentimes they're not clued in, and they said they just didn't see the red flags. And of course, no one is to blame, obviously, but if you can pick up and get early intervention, especially someone who is suicidal, and get them the help they need, you can prevent a tragedy.
Yeah, that's a big one. That's what we're going to be talking about. What we talked about in an earlier segment was also starting to destigmatize mental illness, right? Because there's a lot of families that not only aren't clued into what the signs may be, but they don't even have the languaging to have this conversation with maybe a family member, a friend, a healthcare practitioner, because a lot of us don't know how to talk about anxiety, depression, or even feeling suicidal.
Yes. This is 100% important, and it's, you know, we had a suicide in one of the high schools that in our town, and the town really grappled with whether to even discuss it with the kids, which
wow.
I find just lunacy because, you know, the conversation, and of course, you know, there are studies, and we could argue this, where people will say it's contagious behavior, and there are studies that will back that up, but you know, our town, like towns across this country, need to be, the people in charge and the people, loved ones in the community, need to be aware of these red flags and be aware of spotting signs of depression and be able to talk about it without hiding under your bed is so important to the overall well-being of kids and adults alike.
Yeah, 100%. And that's why, like, just this week on the show, we're talking so much about this to get people comfortable hearing the words used. Hopefully they'll call in and talk more about it, the red flags, because, again, the word suicide is such a profound trigger for so many people that it, like, starts to kind of, you know, shut them down. A lot of people don't have the confidence around it.
It does, and it absolutely. And, you know, that Netflix special, I think, that was produced by Selena Gomez and her mom, the Chris, what was that called? Do you remember?
No. It's 13 about, Reasons?
Yes. 13 okay. Reasons Why. That became controversial because in a lot of towns, and it, you know, a lot of parents did not want their kids seeing it for the same reason. And there's a lot of fear-based reactions on the word suicide. It is a major trigger for people. And unfortunately, it prevents the proper dialogue to take place in these communities where red flags can be picked up.
It's the whole idea, like with the sex talk, you know, right? Parents are afraid if we talk about suicide or sex, it's permission giving, it'll give them an idea. And it's like, no, it gives them the ability to understand communication and boundaries and terminology and confidence around discussing these concepts.
100% agree with you.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Definitely.
Well, Dr. Jen Wider, thank you as always. Where can people find you?
I'm at Dr. Wider across social media, and drwider.com is my website.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Have an awesome
Thanks
night.
Thanks so much, Dr. Chris.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Coming up next, we're going to be doing the question of the night. So still some time to weigh in on that. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. 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 This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right. We're back. And this month is National Suicide Awareness Month. Question of the night is aligned with that. Tonight's question is, what societal changes should be made to support mental health and also towards suicide prevention? Y'all got some good answers. We got right here, get rid of reality TV. You know, it's funny, though. I don't disagree with that. I think that some reality television, most of it actually, is rooted in just drama, negativity, fighting. You know, I was at the gym the other day and I was looking, they have, you know, the TVs playing various reality shows, volumes off, listen to my music. Didn't know what the shows were, who the people were, but you can watch the interactions and it was just everyone's just fighting and smack talking. That's all it was. And it's just amazing that we've culturally decided that that's entertainment and that normalizes things. I mean, straight up, you know, that makes normal and comfortable that kind of behavior. Yeah, I'm not a fan of it all. Someone else said better free healthcare so everyone has access to great mental health care. I mean, that is number one, hands down, something that needs to happen. I wholeheartedly agree with you. Free healthcare is something I absolutely support. Everyone should have access to healthcare. Jobs should provide that to everyone and thereby helping support mental health care because therapy is expensive. Therapy is not cheap. And you can go to places with sliding scale. You can see interns.
but it should be covered. Someone else said address toxic masculinity. Agreed. We work tirelessly on this show to break that down. I think that's one of the number one reasons why the highest population of suicide is men. Toxic masculinity does not allow them to be full total selves. They're not allowed to have emotion, express emotion. They have to be the breadwinner. They have to go out there, and their identity and worth as a man, quote unquote, is tied to being tough and violent, shielding emotionality, but also to their productivity. I work with far too many men that think being a man or a good father, a good husband or partner means working wildly long hours to give everyone in their family what they want. And these people are not looking after themselves and what they need. So I agree with that. Toxic masculinity. Someone else said the destruction of capitalism. Again, hands down problem. Capitalism, which tells you, again, your worth is tied to what you produce, how much you know income you generate and what you can purchase. Very problematic. It's what gives us these long work weeks, 40 hours a week. Are you kidding me? You shouldn't have to work 40 hours a week. And nowadays, even if you do, you still can't afford, in most cities in the U.S., a one-bedroom apartment. There is something wrong with the system. Someone else said, let boys have feelings. Thank you. Dismantle the patriarchy. Yes. LGBTQ plus are valid and loved. Amen. Speaking my language. Someone else said less focus on being perfect and productive and more focus on self-care and growth. Amen. Nailing it. What does this one say? Sorry, trying to read these. Someone else said get rid of the pull yourself up by the bootstraps mentality. Again, same thing. You don't have to struggle on your own. We should be focused more on helping each other, community-based, leaning on others. No one does anything on their own. Someone else said reduce stigma around mental health, get more culturally competent counselors and role models. That's a big one. Thank you for bringing that up. Cultural competence is massively important. The mental health care system is predominantly white. That means that is rooted in a lot of white centricity, possibly some white supremacy woven in there. And we need more counselors, therapists, and role models that are people of color, that are from other minority statuses and identities that'll start to kind of shift the work. Someone else said have more flexible workplaces where you can work from home to be with your kid or pet. Amen. And thank you for throwing pet in there, because that's as legitimate as the kid piece as well. You know, for many people, their pet is their primary loved one, and that's meaningful and that's needed. Thank you to everyone that weighed in on this one. We don't have any time to get to the other ones, but coming up next, we're going to be sliding back in the DMs, listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. 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 This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right. We got a summer party for you in Vegas. All you got to do is go to wearechannelq.com to register and win. We're giving away 5 trips to Vegas for the Life is Beautiful Musical and Arts Festival, plus access to the Life is Beautiful pool party hosted at the Downtown Grand Hotel Casino. So we're putting you up at the Planet Hollywood Hotel Casino for the weekend, giving you 2 3-day passes to the Life is Beautiful Festival. We got people like Billie Eilish, King Princess, Janelle Monáe, Shalou, Kyler Jepsen, Rubens Del Sol. We got everybody there. So register to win. wearechannelq.com. Oh, my God. All right, y'all. Time for the DM. Sliding the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world. We want you to explore it with confidence. Here we go. Hey, Dr. Chris. I've been seeing someone for 2 months, pretty regularly and exclusively, but I'm not sure about our compatibility. Yet. 2 months, long time to still be kind of weighing that out. I'm with you, though. He doesn't initiate many deep conversations about his feelings or about his past experiences, but he will answer questions as I ask them. I want to be respectful and move at a pace he's comfortable with, but I also don't want to create a sense of closeness that isn't built on confidence in our compatibility. How can I encourage him to share more with me without asking a million questions? And should I be concerned that he's struggling so much with opening up and being vulnerable, especially if I feel pretty comfortable doing so? Here's the thing. Compatibility essentially, well, let me back up. Dating is to see, what is it like to be with this person? You've been with them for 2 months, so you know who they are and you know what it's like to be with them. Is it working for you? And that's where the word compatibility swoops in. When you say to me, how can I encourage him to share more? You can have the conversation with them. Hey, I'm really struggling because I feel as though it takes a lot of work for me to get you to open up. But at the end of the day, this person is more introverted. They're quieter. Not everyone's very expressive. This is who he is. And it doesn't necessarily have to change. I mean, the question implies it should be different. The work is really on you assessing, is this person right for me? And am I open to accepting who they are? Because I don't know that you can get him to open up more, and I don't know that he needs to. That's who he is, right? Not, as I said, everyone's that expressive. There's nothing wrong with him being a little quieter. He would do better with someone that's as quiet as he is. But if you want to try to create a little bit of shift, like I said, sit him down and say, listen, conversation lacks depth sometimes. You know, it'd be really meaningful and important to me if you'd be willing to sometimes sit with me longer and just on your own and be more expressive. But again, I don't want you to necessarily shame him, and that statement can feel like you're telling him there's something wrong, and there's nothing wrong. It's just that he's different and might not be the right one for you. If after 2 months you're still struggling, I'd say let him be and accept who he is, or go find someone who's where you're at. There's tons of people that are more emotive and expressive. So you shouldn't be concerned. Again, there's no right level of vulnerability or expression to have. It's just different levels, right? All I could say for you to do the work is on making sure that you're able to be approached, that you're not cutting him off or jumping in. I mean, I do notice that sometimes a couple's in my office, maybe he needs a little more time, so maybe you need to sit with him a little bit longer, allow more space for him to come forward. But at the end of the day, there's no right level, and he's just being who he is and where he's at. You've got to kind of accept that. So sliding the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world. We want you to explore with confidence. Tomorrow night, we have Margaret Cho joining us, comedian and also someone who's very vulnerable and expressive. Definitely want to check that out. 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's our show. As always, it's podcasted at wearechannelq.com, so you can listen to me all day, every day. Thanks for hanging out with me tonight. You guys have an awesome, awesome night.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris.
On Channel Q.